Welcome to the Michael Rivera What Really Happened radio show.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. And it is Saturday, and we are basically in the weekend doing the wrap-up. And I know we had a couple of repeat broadcasts over the last couple of days. We're really going to make an effort on those occasions when I have to go out and do the day job that I pay the bills with. We're going to try and do more pre-recording. We actually did pre-record a show yesterday, and your humble host messed up the web page, so GCN was not able to get those files. But we are going to do better at that. And what we're trying to do is train the giant mutant hamster we have in that wire cage behind the mixer board to take over some of these pre-record duties for us and earn his keep. For all that kibble that we must feed him from time to time. I want to start off the show. And first of all, this being Saturday, and, you know, we're all out here having a lot of fun here, please feel free to call in and join the show. 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Remember, the more you call in, the less you have to listen to me talk. And I want to start off by, first of all, acknowledging the preceding show, the Reading News Review. And I was listening to him go on about if something unfortunate were to happen to Barack Obama, and yes, there's been a lot of threats against him, the possible consequences in terms of nationwide riots. And I lived through the Rodney King riots out in Los Angeles, and it's, you know, it's not a pleasant thing to deal with. I understand when people get pushed to a point where they break and they're going to respond, and I would hope not, because if George Bush wanted a reason to declare martial law in this country and suspend the Constitution, nationwide riots by the black population would definitely be the excuse to do it and would justify reversing a lot of the gains that have been made in civil rights over the last couple of decades. So, you know, we're hoping that Barack Obama is not going to be assassinated. If he commits crimes and illegal things, that's you know, impeach him, take him to court, try him, and jail him. That's the way it's supposed to work. But if something does happen, I would hope cooler heads would prevail, because we could wind up creating the very situation that Bush and the neocons want to bring a true dictatorship to this country. So just some words of caution there. All right, obviously, looking back at the last week, it was a wild week for the Dow and for the economy as a whole. The financial news continues to be negative. On Thursday, we saw this rather miraculous shove upward at the very end that sent the market soaring just way, 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 way. I'm sorry, that was Wednesday that happened. And then yesterday, close to the closing bell, we saw the same thing again. There was the big spike up, but this one didn't quite stick, and the market fell off again. And one of two things is going on. One of two things is going on. Either we're just seeing some good old-fashioned bump and dump. You know, the election's over. It's a lame duck administration, and, you know, people are just pumping the market up in order to put money in their own pocket. Or we may be seeing a desire to keep the market out of the 7,000 range, keep the Dow out of the 7,000. And the reason for that is really very, very simple. When the market was soaring up there at 10,000, 11,000, and people were worried even then about a correction, the conventional wisdom was the bottom of the market would be about 8,000, which is where it is right now. And I think as long as it stays there, people can kind of say, okay, well, it's bad, but this is as bad as it's going to get, and let's stick with it, and so forth. If the Dow descends into 7,000, or worse, even 6,000, then the general perception is going to be nobody really knows where the bottom is. And I think that's when the panic is really going to set in. And so I think there's a very, very strong desire by the market riggers, by the government, by the investment houses, by everybody who makes money on Wall Street, to try and keep the Dow in the 8,000 range, to sort of conform to the conventional wisdom that 8,000 is the bottom. Because if it goes significantly below that, I think that's when you're going to see everybody's going to start unloading. We're going to go to the phones. We've got John in California. Aloha, John. What's on your mind this morning?
Aloha. I just had a question for you. Are you familiar with a person, a journalist named Andy Martin, who writes articles on the Internet and who has a November 18 court date, which is this coming Tuesday in Honolulu. It's a case regarding his suit to get the supposed official birth certificate. Are you familiar with that? Is that a hoax?
Yes, I'm familiar with this, and you know we've seen this going around and around and around and around. And, you know, the bottom line is there have been so many lies about this story. It's kind of reached a point where I think people are pretty prepared. I mean, we had that Jerome Corsi story that was published in WorldNet Daily that claimed the governor of Hawaii had sealed the birth certificate. And the bottom line here is that Governor Linda Lingle is a Republican and not likely to be doing Barack Obama any favors. Now, the way Hawaii law works, and this is true for all the states in the union, okay, birth certificates are handled as confidential records. They are only available to the person, you know, who is named on them. And there's nothing nefarious about that. It is simply to prevent identity theft, because if you can get a copy of a birth certificate for the guy across the street, you can go out and get a passport, you can get driver's licenses, you can then open bank accounts and credit cards and create a whole new fictitious identity. We see this all the time, like when those Israeli agents got nailed down in New Zealand trying to get passports from elderly people and stuff. It's about creating a false identity for either criminal or espionage activity. So that's the reason why birth certificate records are treated that confidentially. And if Andy came out to Honolulu and tried to file a lawsuit to see anybody else's birth certificate, he would run into exactly the same resistance that he's getting. It has nothing to do with the fact that it's Barack Obama. And yes, the fact that he's now the president makes it unlikely somebody would try to fake an identity using his name. But the bottom line is, for most of his life, he was not a big celebrity or a big political success. And, you know, his birth record is a confidential item. Now, Governor Linda Lingle set it up where any journalist who wanted to contact the state office could have somebody basically validate the existence and the content of the birth certificate. You know, but there are certain key numbers that have to be left off. And again, this gets back to the idea of, you know, fighting identity theft. Now, this, you know, and let's face it, the election is over. The election is over, and if we want to remove Barack Obama from office legally, let's catch him committing a crime that will be, you know, we'll have better luck, I think, getting another impeachment through Congress with a Democrat in the White House. We seem to historically have little hesitancy to impeach Democratic presidents, and I'm not saying Bill Clinton didn't deserve it. He did. And they should have removed him from office for lying under oath. But let's hold all the presidents to that same standard. And when Barack Obama commits a similar crime, let's remove him from office then. But at the moment, you know, he won the election by the largest margin in U.S. election history. And frankly, this thing about the birth certificate still, it smacks of sore losing is really what it comes down to. And, you know, we're tired of hearing about it because we had all these phony stories that were being thrown around about it. First of all, they claimed there was no birth certificate. Then one was provided. They said, oh, this is a fake. We know there's a real one. Let's go see the real one. Prove that we're, you know, and they adopted this Napoleonic Code approach where the burden of proof was now on Barack Obama to prove that the birth certificate he provided was not a fake. And it just goes on and on and on. And then there, the most recent claim was that, okay, there's a real birth certificate in Honolulu, but he was actually born in Kenya, and his mother got on an airplane with a brand new baby and flew him to Honolulu to make him a natural born citizen because Ms. Cleo of the psychic hotline told her that 40 odd years later he'd be running for president. And it just, it goes on and on and on. And you know something? I'm flat out tired of hearing about it. And I think the people who are pushing this agenda really kind of burned themselves out because they were caught making so many false statements, you know, like this claim that the Republican governor of Hawaii is protecting the Democratic presidential nominee, you know, and, you know, it's past. This story is kind of over and done with. We're going to take a break here. Thanks for the call, John, and we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more calls and news after these words from our sponsors.
Radio. send the demon to his role. In shackles we will bind them, to the terror they'll be shown. As mindless slaves they will not think, blind eyes they will not see. They'll jail themselves and call the bars the land security.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And if you're watching over the webcam, the sun is finally coming up here over the island of Oahu. And it looks like the clouds are breaking. We had a lot of rain overnight, which is good. When you live on an island in the middle of the ocean, you got to have rain or you don't have water to drink and shower in and all the rest of it. So we had a lot of rain last night, even a little bit of lightning and thunder, which is kind of fun. I like a good thunderstorm. I don't want to see people get hurt, and I don't want to see lightning hit the ground and cause damage. But I like the light show up in the sky. I really do. I always have, ever since I was a little kid. Anyway, if you want to join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Now, getting back to the economy here and the wild ride of the Dow, everybody's lining up for the bailouts. Ooh, it's wonderful, bailout, bailout this, bailout that. The only people not getting a bailout are credit card users who are in too deep. There was a brief flirtation with a plan to provide bailout funds for people who were just really in over their heads on credit card debt. They did not have the collateral necessary to do a bill consolidation loan. Because what you do is, if you have a home with a lot of equity and you run up your credit card bills, you take out a new mortgage on the home to pay off the credit cards. And the interest you're paying on the loan on the home is tax deductible, whereas the interest on the credit cards is not. So that's one of the ways that you can bring your credit card bill back under control and get the government to give you a tax break for the process of doing so. Anyway, here's what's going on. We have, you know, everyone's talking about the auto industry now. It started out with the mortgage companies, then it was the banks, and now it's the auto industry that's got their hand out for billions of dollars of your money. And they're facing some opposition from a lot of people, including yours truly. And so what the supporters of this bailout have come back and said, well, maybe we don't need $25 billion. Maybe we make a deal here for you. For you, $19 billion. Okay. What they've just admitted is they weren't really in that much trouble to begin with. They just want to get their piece of the pie that's being handed out on the taxpayers' back. They don't really need the $25 billion. It's just a number they pulled out of thin air, like the $700 billion for the bailout. There was no scientific actuarial basis for that. It was just a big sounding number that they could take before Congress and say, we need this bailout. So, without realizing it, the supporters of the auto bailout industry have just admitted that they were promoting a number that didn't really reflect a real need, because if they really needed $25 billion to salvage their industry, they would have come back and they said, well, it's got to be $25 billion or don't even bother. Because without that entire amount, we're going to collapse. When the instant they come back and they say, we're going to reduce the amount we're asking for, it's a negotiation for a prize. It's no longer a necessity. I think at this point, we ought to just say, okay, you know, you don't really need the money. You're not acting like you really need the money. You want the money. You're acting like you want the money. But want and need are two different things. And especially in the economy right now, I mean, the government is handing out all this bailout money and all this bailout money, and nobody's talking about who ultimately has to cover all these chits that are being handed out. Now, meanwhile, looking around the rest of the world, Iran, especially as oil prices take a slump, as people have curtailed shipments, driving, flying, demand for oil products has dropped everywhere except, of course, the war zones. And as a result, Iran is moving its financial reserves into gold. They're getting out of currencies, especially the dollar, and they're putting their monetary reserves into gold bullion, which is, I think, a very smart thing for people to be doing and countries to be doing. Now, obviously, a big part of the news this last few days are the wildfires in California. And, you know, the wildfires are very, very bad. And I don't like to see anybody get hurt. But I have to take note that when the wildfires are going through the homes of the rich and famous, places like Montecito, it seems to get more coverage. There's more helicopters and, you know, more comet. Ooh, look what a beautiful home, and it's going up in fire. And yet the wildfires that are going through, shall we say, some of the less desirable neighborhoods, they're not getting the same media coverage. And from the point of view of a family whose home is burning down, whether it's a big home or a little home, and I've been through a home fire myself, so I know what I'm talking about, it's a devastating experience. It is a tragedy of equal scale. The difference being that, you know, the extremely rich and famous probably have more than one home anyway, so they're going to have a roof over their head that night. It's like John McCain. He's got so many houses he doesn't even remember how many he owns. And yet we're seeing this bias in the media that if the tragedy is happening to a celebrity, somehow that makes it more newsworthy, and I resent that. And I know a lot of celebrities, and, you know, 99% of them are very nice people, and I would be empathetic to them if they had a fire. In fact, one of the cast members on this show that I work on, my day job, had a fire a while back, and we were all chipping together, you know, and, you know, helping them out. But for the media to imply that it's a bigger deal when the multi-million dollar homes go up, you know, as opposed to these other little neighborhoods, I think, you know, the celebrity worship of our mainstream media sometimes, you know, it escapes from the tabloids and seems to infect our main media coverage as well. And I have another story about the mainstream media that I'm going to get to, but we're coming to the end of this segment, and I want to basically wrap this up. We've had wildfires in California before, in fact, just a couple of years ago. And the reason for those, and they were devastating fires, is the federal funds that are normally allocated to cleaning up the dead brush, which everybody knows is a fire hazard, those funds got cut. At the same time, the flood control funds in the Mississippi River got cut, bridge safety inspections got cut. All of these funds were cut because Bush needed to spend them on his wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it looked like short-sightedness and stupidity before, but now that we're seeing a repeat, that despite the lessons of the previous wildfires in California, where the government is still allowing the brush to accumulate, they're not allocating the resources for fire prevention, we're beginning to see it's a permanent policy. Our government has made the conscious decision that it's okay to place our homes and neighborhoods at risk, at greater risk, from fire, floods, storms, collapsing bridges, because the money is needed to go fight the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now we're seeing threats to the power lines in California, what's called the interconnect. The very long high-tension lines that link all the power stations and all the areas of demand into one giant network. And now they're talking about rolling blackouts because we weren't taking care of the infrastructure. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors. We're going to talk a little bit more about the wildfires and a little personal story from that whole area. Then we'll be getting into more of the global politics. And again, if you want to join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231, we will be right back.
Listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We've got a caller waiting on the line, but before we get to her, I just wanted to finish up this whole thing about the wildfires. I used to live in Southern California, and I remember quite clearly when you'd see those high-tension towers strung out across the desert, linking the various urban areas together. The ground underneath of it was always kept clear. The brush was not allowed to grow up. There was just this huge, wide, flat area that was kept clean of brush and debris underneath those high-tension wires. And now, apparently, under economic pressure, this maintenance has been deferred, to put it politely, and now we're seeing fires that are actually under the high-tension towers and may cut the lines. They're talking about rolling blackouts returning to California. I mean, this kind, you know, this used to be a unique event in the United States where there would be, you know, deliberate blackouts because they just didn't have enough electricity to go around. Now it's becoming more and more common, you know, as our infrastructure continues to decline. Rolling blackouts are something they used to have all the time in the USSR. And, of course, right now, the Palestinians have no electricity at all because Israel refuses to allow fuel to be sent into the power stations. So if you're in California and your lights go out, you might want to think, this is what it feels like, you know, when somebody else yanks the plug out of the wall. And, it's a shame. This is our money they take from us in taxes. And we pay some of the highest taxes in the world. When you take all the little taxes, see, they don't give it to you in one big bill. Okay, there's, you know, all these different little taxes and withholdings, and then there's all these hidden, buried taxes in the products that you buy. And when you add all of that up together, it's a huge amount of money. And it's not being spent on you, the taxpayer. I mean, we're getting all this news about the homes lost to fires in California, but the million homes lost to foreclosure, they get a statistical mention in the business section. Meanwhile, U.S. tax dollars are still, to this day, being used to subsidize mortgages for homes in Israel. Go figure at that one. Now, years ago when I lived in California, I want to share a personal story here, and then we're going to go to Ruth in Illinois. I paid my way through college working as a professional magician. And obviously, in Southern California, amusement parks are a very big part of the business of being a magician. And I worked a couple of summers up at Six Flags Magic Mountain, which is a fun place. I got to ride all the roller coasters before I'd go home every night. And I like the steel ones, not the wood ones. But anyway, I remember this one day, we were in the middle of a summer. It was one of the hottest, you know, summers we'd had. There were wildfires, and they were getting out of control, and they were all around. And so they decided to close the park for the safety of the people, and they gave them all rain checks and said, you can get in free when you come on back, but, you know, there's the fire. And the fires were literally almost completely all the way around the park. You know, obviously the driveway in and out was open and people got out there. And we, the employees, and especially the street theater people, we remained in the park to make sure that we got all the guests out. And at the very end, when the guests were all gone and it was just us and we were getting ready to leave, and I remember standing there and just seeing all this smoke literally on all sides of us, and the sun was this dark orange coming through, and a totally empty amusement park, you know, with all the glitter and the lights and everything and no people. And I said, this is like an image of the dark regions, you know, with all the fire and smoke around us, and you're standing all alone by yourself in an amusement park with nobody to play with. You know, for all eternity, that's a good image of hell right there. So, you know, it is rough to go through those fires. And, you know, like I said, been there, done that, don't want the T-shirt. We're going to go to the phones. Ruth in Illinois. Aloha, Ruth. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Mike. It's been a while.
Yes, it has.
Two things. One, why isn't Schwarzenegger using the prisoners to clean up the brush? He could get them off the customer service lines, you know, working for private companies, and put them out on the street cleaning brush. And the second thing,
well, they're making
is,
more money having the prisoners work on the customer service lines. Is the bottom? That's it right there.
Well,
Those
jobs could go back to the private sector.
They'd have to pay more for them.
Well,
look, I'm in agreement with you. I'm saying this is the decision making that's going on, and especially as the economy tightens, and the state and local governments don't want to give up all the goodies they've had, they're going to be looking for any way that they can be making a few extra money. And it's not just the government; it's the media. I've got a funny story about Fox News coming up here. You know, but Schwarzenegger, the prison industries are paying the state, you know, so much money to use the prisoners to handle the phone banks. And obviously the security situation is very easy with the phone banks because it's inside the prison. The problem when you take prisoners out and put them on the fire brigades, and they do have volunteer crews from the prisons who will do this. And they're volunteers, and, you know, they're hoping to get a sentence reduction, and I think they should get it because they're risking their lives. And they'll go out there and they'll help. But the financial pressure is to keep the prisoners working on those phone bank lines. and service call centers. And, you know, the money that should be going to the firefighters and to the equipment is being spent on the war machine. And the National Guard, who should be there on the front lines helping the firefighters, they're in Iraq. And as I said, once is a mistake in planning. Twice, this is policy.
Well,
the U.S. government really doesn't care about the American people other than as a source of wealth.
One other thing that plays into this. There's a story on one of those websites. I will pull it and send it, where they've discovered that the Bush family is profiting from the National Forest burning. They can get the land at a severe reduction, you know, pennies on the dollar because it's burned. Mm-hmm. And then they convert it for private use and profit.
Yeah, there's been a lot of that going on.
I will pull that article and send that to you.
Yeah, please send that along, because it's not just this administration. The preceding two administrations, there were allegations along the same line. And I'll give you one more thing to think about right now. I think one of the reasons, you know, the fires are so hard to contain, to put it delicately, there are a lot of homes in these areas that are on fire right now which are, to use the real estate term, underwater. What that means is more money is owed on the mortgage than the property is actually worth. And so I think if you're somebody who's like hopelessly in debt, but your fire insurance is paid up and there's a brush fire two blocks from you, that you might be strongly tempted to, you know, grab your precious few belongings and stash them somewhere and then set fire to your own home and cash in the fire insurance. And, we might see some of that going on there, which is why the fires are so hard to get back under control. And I hate to say that and cast ill on people, but I'm sure it's occurring to a lot of these homeowners who are struggling with these adjustable rate mortgages and they're in serious trouble. This is a great way to get out of the financial obligation without having to go through bankruptcy or foreclosure.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of that going on right now. People are very, very desperate. Anyway, Ruth, thank you very much for the phone call. Please call in again. And, all right, my goodness, the day is just whizzing by. We're almost to the end of this. All right, real quick, I got about 40 seconds here. Fox News is now doing paid product placement at some of their stations, and this is a new trend, or at least they're calling it new, and I'm going to come back and qualify on that. But when you see your favorite morning news show, and when they get out of the hard news, they're trying to draw a line there, but it's already a very, very blurry line. When they get out of the hard news and they go into lifestyle stuff, you're going to start seeing things appearing on the desk, like iced coffees from McDonald's and things like that. And it's not real coffee. They're props. And Fox News is being paid money by these corporations to have these products visible on the desks of their newscasters. Now, for those of us who've been following the mainstream media for a long while, the idea that they're being paid to present things to you wrapped as a news program is nothing new. But I think this kind of makes it really obvious when they start doing product placement. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And we're covering a bunch of stories about the economy. And just a little side note here. Earlier this week, we had a tragedy in North Las Vegas where a man and his wife, he lost his job. Their home was foreclosed. They were made homeless. And he wound up killing himself and his wife. And this did not get a tremendous amount of media coverage. And I'm wondering why, because is this not essentially a disaster of equal magnitude to the wildfires that we're seeing, you know, strike Montecito, California? And yes, the scale of the wildfires, at least on TV, appears to be much worse, and not everybody who's foreclosed is committing suicide, But there have been a few. There was that one attempted suicide, this old lady who shot herself in her home. And that story had a sort of kind of happy ending in that they let her stay in her house because of the public embarrassment. But I would venture to say that probably we're going to be seeing a lot more people who are going to view suicide as their only option when they lose their homes. And we know that already more than a million homes have been lost to foreclosure in the United States during this economic downturn. We know that 700 homes a day are going into foreclosure in Southern California. It's a huge problem. And there is a cost at the far end when those people who have spent their entire lives trying to pay the mortgage and paying all the taxes, and it all starts coming apart and they lose everything they've ever worked for. And I think that's a tragedy. And, you know, a fire is something that is over in a moment, and hopefully you've got insurance. But when everything you've worked for your entire life, somebody just comes and takes it away from you because of economic events you had no control over, like the government shipping manufacturing overseas, giving tax credits to corporations to take those jobs overseas. I think that's a real drama there. And I don't think it's being given the play that it should in the media. Gee, I wonder why. All right, moving to, and again back to the economy. We're having this big G20 summit here in Washington taking place today, dealing with the global financial crisis. A lot of concern about this because the G20, led by France, may move to choose another international reserve currency than the dollar. If they do, and I agree it would be prudent for them to do so, but if they do, it's going to drastically reduce foreign demand for dollars, and that foreign demand has been a major part of the support of the value of the dollar. We're going to see the dollar pretty much plummet, and that means imports are going to become very, very expensive in the United States. And this is when the handing of our manufacturing to other countries, which has been taking place over the last 30 years and really accelerated during the last 8, that's when we're going to really see the backlash from that. You cannot run a nation's economy without manufacturing. You must make products to sell to other countries. And somehow we got this political and corporate culture that just decided, hey, we don't need to actually make things. We can just make the money grow by whipping it around in circles at a very high rate of speed. I know some of the major players of Enron went to jail, but I think there's a lot of people in the business community who are sitting there saying, if they can do it, so can we, and we'll be too smart to get caught. It is a reality in this country that white-collar crime costs the American people easily 10 times as much as street crime does. When Charles Keating, of the notorious Keating Five, you're hearing a lot about him during the McCain candidacy, Charles Keating took more from his investors and depositors in that 1 year at the end of Lincoln Savings and Loan. He took more money from his customers than all of the muggers and burglars and thieves and street robbers in the entire nation for that same year. That is the scale of white-collar crime. And again, look at what happened with Enron. And yet, obviously, law enforcement is almost totally and completely focused on street crime and handing out tickets if you're not wearing your seatbelt and citing you for smoking in public. That's where the major focus of law enforcement is keeping the people down. And this gets us back to this weekend summit, because U.S. intelligence officials are saying they have no credible information about potential terrorist or criminal attacks against the G20 summit. In fact, law enforcement officials are saying they're much more concerned about angry protesters, people who've been made jobless by the financial meltdown, than they are about terrorists. Now, this should not come as a surprise, because folks, all of this spying and domestic surveillance that we have been seeing in the country, the reading of our emails, the breaking into our computers over the internet, eavesdropping on our phone calls without warrants, none of this has anything to do with finding Osama bin Laden who's been dead since December 2001 anyway. It's about keeping an eye on the American people, because the government recognizes that the population of the United States has been pushed to the edge of an uprising. And so all the spying on the protesters, it's all part of policy. The government views the American people with suspicion and a small amount of fear. And that's the real reason for all of this police state stuff. It's got nothing to do with fighting terrorism. I mean, look at the TSA at the airport now. They're confiscating iPods and laptops and digital media to make sure that you're not carrying pirated, copyrighted materials. That's the TSA's new job. There really aren't terrorists out there that they're able to find. You know, and half the practice bombs get past the TSA anyway. Remember that video we posted on our website, I think, from 2 weeks ago? Somebody shot at an airport of a TSA thug basically just sleeping right at the X-ray station, and the passengers are just going right on past, you know, and say, okay, he's asleep. Let's just get on the airplane and go where we're going to go. So the TSA's mission has been changed. They're now copyright enforcers at the airport gates to make sure you're not smuggling something through on digital media that you ought not to. Which is kind of silly, because the newest little micro memory chips can fit inside a hollowed-out nickel. We ran that story earlier in this week. Those are cool. We used to use those as magicians. We'd get those little hollowed-out coins to put things in. And now the little digital media will fit inside there, a whole gigabyte inside a nickel. For those of us who are old enough to remember what O29 means in computers, the idea of a gigabyte inside a nickel is just, it's awe-inspiring. But I digress. Moving over to Iraq as we wind up hour one of our show, Maliki has agreed to a deal to keep U.S. troops in Iraq until 2011. Now, remember, the U.N. mandate for the United States to go in and get Saddam's weapons of mass destruction, which, of course, as it turned out, he never really had anyway, ends with the end of this year. Okay, without this agreement by Maliki, the U.S. would be required to remove their troops from Iraq, or at least confine them to the existing U.S. bases. They would not be allowed to go out into the country blowing up sheep, you know, assaulting women, running tanks over taxi cabs, or any of those other fun things that made America great. So they have been arm-twisting Maliki for months now to try and get him to sign a security agreement that will allow the U.S. to stay in Iraq. And apparently now he's been offered enough money or shown enough blackmail photos where he's going to say, okay, the troops can stay till 2011. Why? Why are we even bothering doing this, okay? Iraq is selling their oil to other countries. We're not going to get that. There were no weapons of mass destruction. Saddam is hanged, even though even President Bush admits he had nothing to do with 9/11. And the whole gassing the Kurds story, the U.S. Army War College has pretty much concluded that was actually Iran who did that as an act of war during the Iran-Iraq War. Because the Kurds were gassed with a gas weapon that Iran had and Saddam did not. We knew what Saddam had because we sold it all to him. Okay, that's the end of hour number one. We're going to stop here for some commercials and a news break. And we're going to come back in hour two and just sort of pick up where we left off. So have some coffee, walk around, open the window, get some fresh air, listen to the news, and we'll be back in just about 7 minutes.
Welcome to the Michael Rivera What Really Happened radio show.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to hour two of our Saturday Mayhem broadcast here. Greetings to all of our ground affiliates who join us for this second hour, and a friendly reminder that we do all the really fun stuff and the really good jokes and the important news stories in hour number one. So keep that in mind when you're making your programming decisions for the coming broadcast year. Now, when we went to the news break, we were talking about Iraq. And apparently, after weeks of arm-twisting, Maliki has agreed to a deal which will keep U.S. troops in Iraq until 2011. And I was posing the question, why? Why are we keeping American kids in uniform stationed in a country that doesn't want them? Okay? Why are we doing this? Because Saddam did not have banned weapons of mass destruction. He had nothing to do with 9/11. We have President Bush on videotape admitting to that. Iraq was not supporting al-Qaeda. They were theological, political enemies. If Saddam had given weapons to al-Qaeda, al-Qaeda probably would have turned and used them on Saddam Hussein. So, the war is over. Saddam has been hung, justifiably or not. He is gone. Why are we keeping our kids there in Iraq? Now, obviously, part of this is the continuing garrisoning of the entire world by the American Empire. We have some 740 bases around the world in other people's countries where we keep our young people in uniform, standing there glaring at these people to keep them in line with American policy, which is obviously not working as well as it used to. So why are we keeping our kids in Iraq? And more to the point, why is the Bush administration working so hard to get this treaty signed when the current UN mandate and the Bush administration end at the end of this year? It seems like Bush, on his way out of office, is attempting to commit the United States to a continuation of the war policy, despite any desires to the contrary by the incoming administration. And this brings me to this other story that we were seeing earlier today about how Barack Obama has been the subject of more threats than any other president-elect in our history. And we're hearing these continuing stories of an event at inauguration that al-Qaeda is going to do because they will see the U.S. as weak when Barack Obama takes office, or at least it'll be in a period of weakness because of the transition of whoever's going to be Secretary of Defense and so forth and so on. And folks, that's a lot of nonsense. That is a lot of nonsense. The only people who are going to want to stage a terror attack at the inauguration or shortly thereafter are going to be those interests who want to perpetuate America's war policy, either for personal profit, aggrandizement, or allegiance to a foreign nation that sees its own fortunes improving the more the United States can be convinced to kill its Middle East enemies. And you need to keep in mind that most of al-Qaeda appears to be a front for intelligence. There was that al-Qaeda cell they arrested in Palestine a while back, turned out to be a bunch of Mossad agents. Then we have Adam Gadon, the American al-Qaeda. He gets a lot of press right now. His real name is Adam Perlman. He's the grandson of a board of directors member of the Anti-Defamation League. And so he's running around saying, "I'm al-Qaeda, I'm al-Qaeda, ooh, be scared of me." And just, you know, waving the booga booga at the American people so that we will go on forking over our money and our children for wars in the Mideast, which don't seem to be accomplishing much of anything beneficial to the United States of America. So it seems like the pro-war factions are not going to go gently into that good political night. They're still pushing as hard as they can to create a new war, someplace, any place. Keep the military-industrial complex fed that Eisenhower warned us about all those years ago. Remember the end of World War II? I want to talk about an ungrateful nation. We got into World War II a little late in the eyes of some of the other allies, and we defeated Germany. We defeated Japan. We convinced Italy to change sides halfway through. And then when it was all over, and everybody was saying, peace is at hand. We can, you know, take back some of our tax money, and we can spend it on schools and hospitals and roads and those things that make our lives better. And the military-industrial complex said, no, we need to keep on spending, we need to be on a war budget, we need to prepare for war against those godless communists. And they went out to Hollywood, and they went back to all those producers and directors, and they said, you made those great movies that, you know, portrayed the Germans and Japanese as really bad, evil people, and now we need you to do the same thing for the Russians, because we're gonna make a lot of money selling the American people on the need to fight this new Cold War, and it's really great because we'll get all this money and we'll buy all these weapons and we won't actually have to use them and prove that they really work, and, you know, relatively few people will get killed, so it's just a sweetheart deal for everybody. And a lot of people in Hollywood said, well, okay, I guess we'll go along with that. And to their credit, a lot of people in Hollywood did not. And they said, I'm not going to make propaganda films. I mean, the Russians helped us defeat Hitler. And this is how we're going to show our gratitude? And so J. Edgar Hoover, who permanently believed that Hollywood should always be the propaganda division for the U.S. government, and was instrumental in kicking Charlie Chaplin out of the United States when Chaplin refused to go along with this agenda. Hoover teamed up with an ambitious senator by the name of Joseph McCarthy, and they went on a commie hunt in Hollywood. And over 400 careers were ruined. 10 men went to jail, the famous Hollywood 10. There were a couple of suicides, a lot of divorces. And it was all because these were people who stood on principle and said, I'm not going to make movies selling a new war with Russia when I don't see that there's a moral reason for doing it, especially because it's just for making more money for the weapons manufacturers. And so, we saw that very ugly chapter in America's history. That was the whole Red Scare, un-American activities situation. It was a sales pitch for the Cold War. And now the Bush administration, on their way out, they're trying as hard as they can to get a new Cold War going with Russia, because they missed the glory days of the 50s and 60s, when the American people would shovel their money at the government just as hard as they could to save us from those mean old scary communists. And Bush and his buddies are trying to kick up a new one. And that was the reason why in November of last year, the U.S. and Israel were sending arms and training to Georgia, because they were hoping to kick off a new war with Russia. And Russia blew through the Georgians in about 5 days' time, which shows you how good U.S. training and weapons can be. And it was over before it really got going. And I think it was at that point plans to invade Iran really collapsed, because now the Russians proved they could support Iran by land through that land bridge between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea. And that was when it all began to come apart. But the military-industrial complex has never gone away. And they're trying to find a way to create a whole new Cold War so that they can continue to bleed you dry for money. Because when people think there's a danger and there's a threat, whether it's Osama bin Laden, who's been dead for, going on 7 years now, or the Russians or the communists or whoever, as long as there's something to scare the American people with, we'll give the government our money and we won't complain about it. But the Soviet Union went away. You know, Al-Qaeda has never really materialized as a major threat, and we're wondering why our bridges are collapsing and our states are burning up because the money that should be there for fire prevention and infrastructure is just going away and vanishing. And I'm going to stop here at that point about vanishing money, because we're going to take a break for some commercials, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the trillions that vanished from the Pentagon and the trillions that are in the process of vanishing from the Federal Reserve that you are on the hook for. So if you want to join us on the air for the rest of the show, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. The phone lines are open. Grab that phone, punch those buttons, call in. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
He's scared, he's lonely, and he knows he screws up everything in life. But I guess that's the way it goes when you're the Antichrist. He's aroused by all things evil. That's why he wants more war. When he gets to the other side, maybe he'll wonder what it's all been for. He's George W. Bush.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And we have got, I wanted to finish up this comment from the last break before we go to Clarence in Oklahoma here. We were hearing about our economic situation here and the huge amounts of money that are being made by the military-industrial complex, and it seems like so much of our money just vanishes into that maw of militarism. It's estimated that roughly 50 cents out of every tax dollar goes for war. The U.S. spends more money on war than all other industrial nations combined. And it's very wasteful spending, and a lot of people get very, very rich off of it. And the American people who are struggling just to keep their homes right now are justified in saying, why are we spending all this money? Why are we spending all this money on these wars and on these exotic weapon systems? And, where's it all going? And here's an interesting thing. One of the issues that we deal with on this show is the biggest story of September 10th, 2001. And a lot of people don't remember this for reasons that will become very obvious. But on September 10th, 2001, Donald Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense, got up at the podium at the Pentagon and admitted that the Pentagon had simply misplaced $2.3 trillion with a T of your taxpayer dollars. Just a big, like, well, we're doing our best. We don't know where it went. And they set up a special accounting office in the Pentagon to try and find where all that money had gone to. I mean, $2.3 trillion, that's a lot of money. You know what they say in Washington, D.C.? A trillion here, a trillion there. Soon you're talking some real money. Well, the Pentagon, and it wasn't the first time a trillion or two had gone walkabout at the Pentagon. It was actually the second time, and it was becoming a huge scandal. And it should have been the economic story of the decade. But just 24 hours later, of course, the World Trade Towers were attacked, and the newspapers forgot all about the $2.3 trillion that was missing from the Pentagon. All of a sudden, it was old news. And then, of course, we had an airplane hit the Pentagon, and guess where it hit? It hit the offices that were set up to find where that $2.3 trillion had gone to. Talk about an amazing coinkydink, not to be believed. So here we have today the G20 nations, and it was just on the news during the break I was watching. The G20 nations are calling for more transparency in how nations are running their finances. And, you know, it's kind of ironic to hear the American representatives saying, oh, yes, we agree with that, because right now Congress and the Federal Reserve are locked in a battle regarding another $2 trillion. This is a different $2 trillion from the ones we were just talking about. The Federal Reserve, over and above the $700 billion bailout that you all know about and tried to get Congress, your representatives, to vote against, the Federal Reserve has loaned out an additional $2 trillion, and they won't say to who. And even more importantly, they won't tell anybody what collateral was agreed to support these loans. A lot of secrecy here. And it's not just, it's private kind of stuff. The Federal Reserve is fighting Congress on this information. Now, the Federal Reserve is not a government agency. It's no more federal than Federal Express. It is a privately owned bank, and it should be subordinate to the laws of the United States of America and the will of the American people. And yet, here we're seeing all this loaned money going out. And I got to tell you, this reminds me of an institution called the Arkansas Development Finance Authority. This goes all the way back to the Clinton years when he was governor, just before he became president. And this was at the height of the Iran-Contra gun and drug running operation that Reagan's attorney general authorized, William French Smith, with a very young Ken Starr as his assistant. Changed the rules, allowing the CIA to be associated with drug-running operations without having to report them to law enforcement. This basically gave the CIA a monopoly on drug smuggling. And it was all coming through MENA, Arkansas, and Governor Bill Clinton was watching it. And he set up this agency, the Arkansas Development Finance Authority, which was handing out the goodies from this operation. And it was handed out as loans to businesses that were never repaid. And there was never any collateral associated with the loans. So the money just flowed out from this agency, and it never came back. And that was how the participants, the people who were providing the guns and supplies for the Contras, that's how they were being paid. And everybody was making profits along it. And it's one of the reasons why there was so much mystery about the campaign money Bill Clinton used in his run for the White House, where all the donors listed the address of the Democratic National Committee as their address instead of a home address. So I'm looking at this $2 trillion that is going out from the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve won't say who got it as loans. They won't say what collaterals used to secure the money. Frankly, it looks to me like the looting of the United States is underway well and truly right now. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Clarence in Oklahoma. Aloha, Clarence. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Mike. Great to talk to you again.
Well, great to talk to you. Before you get going, though, I actually got a very lovely picture postcard from our mutual friend Thomas in Sweden, and it's got these wonderful little photos of windmills and stuff all over the front, and I've got it taped up here, here. It's on the webcam. For those of you who are watching the show on the webcam, that's Thomas's picture postcard. So what's on your mind today, Clarence?
Well, you know, after listening to what you just had to say there, it kind of changes my topic a little bit.
Well, I apologize deeply for that.
Well, this is, you know, I never can, you know, there's no accounting for that. So, at any rate, my mind works in mysterious ways, or at least I've been told. But when you just mentioned that, you know, that whole Contra thing and the drug smuggling thing, I heard about the Mean Arkansas thing, and it's been well documented. And, you know, that actually was going on, though it had gone on since the Reagan administration.
Yes.
And, well, of course, I guess that was during that time when Clinton was governor of Arkansas.
That's right, and George Bush Sr. was vice president.
Yes, exactly. And do you remember there was an incident, and I remember this very well back in the 80s, where one of the contract CIA mercenary planes was shot down, and they had one survivor, a guy named Eugene Hassenfuss.
Yes, that's what ripped the whole lid off the
operation. The whole thing came open right there, and the news media got a hold of that, and he got interviewed. At the time, we didn't have the Internet. We didn't have an alternative media like we do now. And most people bought the story, well, these guys were just flying military supplies to the Contras down there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
well, they shouldn't have even been doing that because that was a violation of the Boland Act.
Well, exactly.
It wasn't officially... Yeah, okay.
That's what blew that open. But, of course, what did Congress do? Nothing. Which is usually what Congress does anymore. They're just an appendage now. And,
well, they had a bunch of hearings here, and they were chaired by Hawaii's Senator Daniel Inouye. And anytime they started talking about MENA and drug running, he'd scream executive session, close the doors, and kick out the media. Clarence, stay on the line through the commercial break because I want to pick up with the story when we come back. This is the What Really Happened radio show. I'm your host, Mike Rivero. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We've got Clarence from Oklahoma on the line, and we've kind of wandered off to a little bit of history. And it's not isolated because history really does leak together in one long continuous chain. The way we teach history in schools is deeply flawed because we break it up into little pieces and treat each event as if it's isolated, and they really aren't. And what happened back in the 1980s and 1990s with Iran-Contra and the savings and loan scandal and the Clinton-Bush duopoly, which persisted up until this year, it's all tied together in one huge chain of corruption. We were talking about the crash of the cargo plane with Eugene Hassenfuss, which blew the lid off of the Iran-Contra operation. And the reason it did is because even the delivering of military supplies to the Contras was a violation of the Boland Act, which forbids private individuals from engaging in foreign policy operations with other countries, that being technically the domain of the United States Congress. So these planes were flying down with military supplies, and in order to fund this, because Congress hadn't donated any money for the operation, they were bringing drugs back. And it was being brought back by a bunch of former Air America pilots, including Barry Seal, who wound up very dead after turning state's evidence on this whole drug running operation. And it was just this whole huge mess. And the hearings into Iran-Contra were a limited hangout in that they focused on the Boland Act violations and the arms running, but steered very much clear of the parallel drug running that was coming back on the same airplanes on the reverse course and all of this coming in. And a lot of people are wondering why George Bush Sr. only served one term in office. Well, the reason was that he knew full well that he was not going to be able to survive a second term and keep the investigation away from himself. And so he decided he needed to get out of the White House and take the heat off the Iran-Contra investigation. But he needed to lose the White House to the one Democrat that he could count on to keep the secret. That, of course, was Governor Bill Clinton, who was governor of the state where the operation was running out of. And this kind of a handoff is nothing new in history. When Richard Nixon knew that he was not going to be able to finish his term, he got rid of Spiro T. Agnew and got Gerald Ford in as vice president, because Gerald Ford had been on the Warren Commission covering up the Kennedy assassination. So Richard Nixon knew that what was on the White House tapes about the so-called hanky-panky and the Cuba option and the JFK thing, that Gerald Ford would go out of his way to make sure that that never came out, because that was the real secret behind Watergate, why the burglary even took place and what was being covered up there. And sure enough, Gerald Ford came in, said, pardons issued to everybody, the investigation is over, our long national nightmare, blah, 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 let us move on from here. So these kind of handoffs take place all the time where a president will say, okay, I need to get out of Dodge because the lynch mobs are gathering at the gate. I've got to make sure that the guy who gets the job after me is going to be as zealous about protecting the secrets as I was. And that's basically how Clinton got his little walk into the White House, then handed it back to George Bush Jr., who was going to hand it to Hillary, but that didn't work out. They're still talking about running Jeb Bush, not in 2012. They're going to throw Palin to the wolves in 2012, but they're going to bring Jeb Bush back in 2016.
Okay.
Anyway, I digress.
Yeah, two quick final points. I think Hillary has a good chance of being, the duopoly may not be over. She has a good chance, I think, of being Secretary of State. There'll be a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Lyndon Johnson's old reply about when asked why he didn't for J. Edgar Hoover?
Mm-hmm.
I will clean this up for radio. But
yes, please do.
Because you probably remember it. He said,
you're
I'd rather
for
have him inside
to shut
the
us
tent
down.
Urinating out than outside the tent urinating in. And
yes.
What's the old thing? Hold your friends close, hold your enemies even closer.
That's exactly right.
And then the next thing and the last thing, I just want to verify about this whole thing. I'm tired of this whole thing, too, about the Obama birth certificate thing. If there were any legs to it, don't you think the McCain campaign would have hit them full force with that when they saw they were losing in the last week or so?
Absolutely.
And then the final thing on the birth certificates, I remember reading one of the oldest tricks in the espionage business was if a spy wants a different identity, they go to a graveyard. And they go find a headstone of someone that died as a childbirth or as a child within a year. And it's born near their birthday, this person's birthday. They didn't do a good job back then, I don't know how they do now, of matching birth certificates with death certificates. So all they had to do was get a hold of the birth certificate. And they don't know that the person's dead. And you can get, like you say, get a whatever you need. Passport, driver's license, it used to be one of the oldest tricks in the book.
Yeah, well, there's still a lot of tricks out there. And if you've got the resources of a nation state where you've got, this thing they've got now here, Maine Corps, we're going to talk about that real briefly here. When you have those kind of resources where you can say, okay, we know this person was born over here at this date and they died way over in this other country, at age two, you know that when you go back to the first country with a birth certificate, they're not checking death certificates in another country.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's still a wide-open gate. And that's the reason why birth certificates are always treated as confidential documents, and it's got nothing to do with Barack Obama. It's because of identity theft issues. And
it could be a terrorist issue also.
Well, absolutely, it's a terrorism issue. And here in Hawaii, we're a Democratic state, no question, but we have a Republican governor who's got a lot of Republicans on her staff. And believe me, if there was anything to this birth certificate situation, the real birth certificate would have been leaked long before now. Because there are a lot of people here in our local government who are very unhappy with Barack Obama. And, you know, this was a very dirty, intense political campaign, and things get leaked all the time. And, you know, so this idea that the Republican governor of Hawaii is covering up for the Democratic candidate for president was a silly story. And, of course, it was exposed to the complete fabrication. Anyway, Clarence, we're going to let you go. We've got another caller on the line we need to get to. So thanks. And, you know, again, call in. Always a joy to have you on the show.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to go to Todd in Ohio. Aloha, Todd. What's on your mind today?
Hello, Mike. Yeah, I called you before the election, and I brought up the issue. This was when the bailout was still being discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And I suggested that if enough people put enough pressure on Congress that they could stop the bailout since it was around.
Well,
that
we were
time
both that, being optimistic about that one, I think.
Well, no, but the point was that, you know, the first congressional vote actually was against the bailout, and it was a result of all the calls of outrage from, you know, all these enraged citizens calling in saying, and then the second one did go through. And I was suggesting that, now that they have this newfound or newly discovered power to influence Congress, if they would, I really didn't get to make this point, if they would simply use that power to go beyond saying what they don't want and start saying what they do want.
Mm-hmm.
And I would suggest that what they should demand, not request but demand, is monetary reform, such as there's many examples I could give that are on the web for people to check out, one of which I think you may be familiar with. It's a website called themoneymasters.com. They have an already crafted bill called the Monetary Reform Act. And there are several others I could mention if I have time. But the one thing that I think a lot of people in the alternative media really missed the boat on, and this is just constructive criticism, is that there's like a million and one ways that they're always coming up with to diagnose the problem. And almost no time is spent on encouraging, using this platform that they have, people in talk radio and the alternative media in general, to encourage people, all their listeners, to push for these already crafted solutions. In other words,
Todd, we got to take a break. Stick with us through the commercial. We'll come back on the other end. This is What Really Happened. We'll be right back.
Cascadia Public Radio.
Fear and hate will rule them, said the demon to his robe. In shackles we will bind them, to the terror they'll be shown. As mindless slaves they will not think, blind eyes they will not see. They'll jail themselves and call the bars Homeland Security.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And we have got Todd on the phone from Ohio. And in response to your comment, Todd, the Congress was willing to respond to phone calls regarding the bailout because there was an election coming up. And the problem right now is the election is over. And Congress is now feeling immune from the will of the people for at least the next 2 years. And obviously for the senators, you know, in many cases as far as six. And unfortunately, we did send a very good message to the political establishment that when the American people vote together as one people for one purpose, that we can overcome the vote fraud. Because there was a lot of vote fraud this election, perhaps even more than we saw in 2000, 2004. But it wasn't enough to reverse the various landslides we were seeing across the country as the GOP fell into ruin and darkness for at least the next 2 years. So the bottom line is what worked back during the bailout, at least tentatively, is not going to work now. And I say tentatively because ultimately the financial industry got the bailout they wanted. And they even violated the Constitution to do it because revenue bills are supposed to initiate in the House, but it failed in the House. Then the Senate put together theirs, and the House said, okay, we agree, and that was how it was done. But if anybody were to take this to the United States Supreme Court, which is still heavily conservative, this would actually probably be challenged and ruled as unconstitutional, because revenue bills may not originate in the Senate. That is in the Constitution. But, you know, in the end, we put on a good show, and we did get the bill voted down initially. But in the end, they still went ahead and did what they wanted to do, what their backers wanted to do. You know, Congress is the finest government money can buy, and they're always for sale to the highest bidder. And, you know, ultimately, the number of things that need to change in order to bring the government back under the control of the people, it's hard to know where to start. My personal agenda is we've got to have honest, accurate, and verifiable elections back in this country. And obviously, the government being the beneficiary of the current rigged system, they're going to be very slow on this. I mean, you've got the Diebold automated teller machines won't lose a penny from one end of this country to the other, but the Diebold voting machines have at least 12 known ways you can get in and rig the outcome on this. Obviously, that is by design. So, you know, yes, we need to be suggesting things to do and things to lobby for. Unfortunately, most of the suggestions I'm getting these days are things that are basically kind of illegal. And, you know, I'm not one to encourage violence, although I recognize that the way things are going, it may be unavoidable.
I was talking about crafted legislation that's already put together, and just waiting for someone to lobby for it on behalf of the citizens. And that's one thing that people in the alternative media, because the corporate media is not going to do it, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm saying, you know, everyone, like, for instance, everyone that listens to GCN has probably at least heard of the Patriot Act, the Military Commissions Act,
yeah,
the John Warner Defense Authorization Act, and that's great. But what's tragic is that almost very few probably have even heard of the Monetary Reform Act, like I mentioned before. There's another one called the American Monetary Act, which you can learn about mm-hmm. at monetary.org. There's a greenback proposal, as I call it, by Ellen Brown at a website called webofdebt.com.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's just, I think that is what is really holding the American people back, is the fact that they're always focusing on the problem and thinking, okay, well, I would suggest that we don't have another 2 years to wait with the economy. But if we wait another 2 years, you know, that's the problem, is people are in the habit of treating politics as just another spectator sport.
Well, I agree that's a problem. I agree that's a problem.
One corporate owned team over another and then root for it from the sidelines.
Okay,
and that's just not going to get the job done.
Todd, okay. Yes. I agree with you that politics should not be a spectator sport. My personal opinion, I actually started an organization called Vine for the grassroots, ha ha ha, and it stands for voting is not enough, and that is that people need to get dynamically involved with the process of government. But the reality is that Congress is not going to be listening to the ordinary citizens until there's another election where their seats are on the line. Then they'll start paying attention. So what you need to do for all of these bills that you're talking about is you need to sort of start building a coalition to support lobbying efforts ahead of the next elections, when Congress is going to be paying attention, because any lobbying efforts on behalf of the people right now are pretty much going to be wasted, because Congress won't see any benefit in listening to the people. They're not running for office. They've got all the money they want from the big corporate donors. And, you know, this is not a time when Congress feels they're going to be listening to the American people. I wish it was otherwise.
If it's just a few people here and there, I agree. What I'm saying is that people in the alternative media, especially talk radio, are in a position to get, instead of the usual hundreds of people scattered all over the country, to literally get tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, but look how many called in on the bailout, and yes, they got a token symbolic victory in the House, but the bailout still went through. Listen, Todd, we have to let you go. We're almost out of time. We've got one more caller I want to get to, so thank you for the call, Todd. Call in again, and we're going to switch over to Richard in Texas. Aloha, Richard. What's on your mind?
I'm just kind of curious. I just tuned into your radio show, and I heard you talking about, you know, the the false left right paradigm, and I think you're pretty right on that. And then you went on to say some stuff about I guess you're an Obama supporter, or
I was a Ron Paul supporter. I sort of viewed Obama as the lesser of the remaining evils.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'm just kind of curious as to how you've come about this thought that there's just so much I could say, and there's very little time, but the fact is I agree with the fact that the left-right paradigm there's no such thing as, you know, Democrat or Republican.
The bailout's perfect example. Kind of proved that one.
What's that?
I said Joe Lieberman kind of proved that one. He just, you know, it's a Republican
for
code,
sure,
a Democratic code, depending upon which one's going to work for him.
Right. All the above. I just don't get the, you know, the, I'm really worried, I guess, about the blind faith in one person to do so much when we know mm-hmm. that the president does so little. I'm thoroughly concerned about that. And the birth certificate thing, it doesn't seem like a farce to me. It's just because of the wording on the birth certificate in and of itself, African American wasn't a phrase in America until, I believe, the mid-80s. And his birth certificate says African American on it. I have a friend whose birth certificate, he was born in 75, and his says black. His birth certificate says black.
Well, you raise an interesting point here, but again, we go back to the situation that if there was really a there, McCain's people would have gone after it. Hillary's people certainly would have gone after it.
I think the McCain issue is he was thrown out as a shill to begin with. I mean, look at his running mate choices. I think that just makes it completely apparent that he was just thrown up to be like, oh, look, you know, you've got this old guy who's going to die in 2 years, and then a woman who doesn't even know any foreign policy or where half these countries are, and she says she can see Russia from her house or something like that. I forget the exact quotes, but it just seemed like such a an obvious, like, well, this is who you have to vote
for.
I'm
in agreement with you, except that I think McCain was made the candidate to lose to Hillary Clinton to keep the Bush-Clinton duopoly going along. And I think the political establishment were so obsessively focused on Ron Paul and keeping him out of the running, they weren't
right.
paying attention to Barack Obama until it was too late. So, I don't think this election was as controlled as people like to think. I think it got out of control. I think Barack Obama surprised a lot of people. But he is a professional politician, and I expect him to behave as one. And so far, I'm a little disappointed with some of his choices, but I'm not overly surprised. As I said, my attitude about Obama is he's the lesser of the two evils. And I still think that. I still think if McCain had won, we'd be in a lot worse trouble right now. But it doesn't matter who got the Oval Office. The situation in this country is dire, and drastic measures are called for. And so far, we're seeing a continuation of the policy. We're going to rob the poor to give to the rich. And it's at this point we need Robin Hood to come in.
I agree. Thank you very much, sir.
All right, well, thank you for the call, Richard. That's the end of our show. Man, this one just flew by. Thanks to all the callers, because you always make the show much more enjoyable for everybody when you pick up that phone and dial in and share your words of wisdom. We're going to be back on Monday picking up and seeing what the stock market is going to be doing for this next week. Probably going to be a wild ride. May dip into the 7,000s, and I think that's when people are going to get really, really nervous. So until then, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, drive carefully, a lot of road rage out there right now, and aloha, America.